And the gospel lesson for today, a familiar and beloved tale. Now all the tax collectors and sinners were coming near to listen to Jesus, and the Pharisees and the scribes were grumbling and saying, "This fellow welcomes sinners and eats with them." So Jesus told them this parable. There was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, "Father, give me the share of the property that will belong to me." So he divided his property between them. A few days later, the younger son gathered all he had and traveled to a distant country. And there he squandered his property in dissolute living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. He would gladly have filled himself with the pods that the pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, "How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough and to spare? But here I am dying of hunger. I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands.' So he set off and went to his father. But while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. Then the son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his slaves, 'Quickly, bring out a robe, the best one, and put it on him. Bring a ring and put it on his finger. Bring sandals and put it on his feet. And get the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' And they began to celebrate. Now his elder son was in the field. And when he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. He called one of the slaves and asked what was going on. He replied, 'Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fatted calf because he has got him back safe and sound.' Then he became angry and refused to go in. His father came out and began to plead with him, but he answered his father, 'Listen, for all these years I've been working like a slave for you, and I've never disobeyed your command. Yet you have never given me even a young goat so that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came back, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fatted calf for him.' Then the father said to him, 'Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice because this brother of yours was dead and has come to life. He was lost and has been found.'" This too is for us the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. So, those of you who would dominate the Jeopardy category popular 70s TV shows have undoubtedly looked at the sermon title this morning and said, he's left off Cotter. The rest of you are thinking, welcome back, thank you, but I didn't know that I was missing. Just goes to show how tricky sermon titles are. I thought about calling this sermon Wasted, but we Methodists frown on drinking, particularly too much drinking, and I didn't want anyone to get the wrong idea. Of course, the scribes and the Pharisees had got the wrong idea about Jesus, that is. It seems that Jesus had been attracting quite a lot of followers lately, only they weren't the right sort of people. They weren't the sought-after demographic. They weren't the popular, hip, with-it-in crowd, at least not so far as the insider crowd viewed them. They were tax collectors, you see, meaning that they were paid professional debt collectors who had sold out their fellow citizens, sold out to Rome in order to make a living. The other sinners were, in Professor Harold Hill's memorable phrase, libertine men and scarlet women, people with a past they couldn't quite shake, and all of them were coming to hear Jesus. Only the good people, the people who always knew the right and proper thing to do, didn't approve. Proper preachers prefer polite parties. Jesus was making friends in low places, and the scribes and the Pharisees were quick to blog their disapproval. So Jesus told them a story. It's a story most of us know. It's the story of a father who had two sons. The older boy was quiet, modest, serious, responsible. He had gone into the family business and hoped to take it over one day. The younger brother, by contrast, was a brat, selfish, self-interested, a party boy who thought only of himself. And one day he had the unmitigated gall to approach his father and demand that his father sell part of the family land and give him his share of the future inheritance. And then, against the advice of his financial planner and his attorney and his accountant, Dad deeded some of the land to the younger son, who promptly sold it to a group of developers and left home for the far country without so much as a thank you. To the surprise of absolutely no one who knew him, the boy quickly got wasted. In the wonderfully euphemistic way the upper classes have of speaking about moral violations of community standards, the boy squandered his property in dissolute living. Word on the street was he was the guy to call for a good time, and those libertine men and scarlet women certainly did. Of course, you and I are outraged by the boy's outrageous behavior, and we hardly know which is worse, the greed that sparked the gall to demand his share of the inheritance, or the gross immorality of his riotous living. What we may not have noticed is the real meaning behind the disgraceful demand for his share of the inheritance. Not only does he effectively wish his father was dead, Chernyshenko points out that he is removing himself from the household, for legally he would no longer have any rights to the property or even to its use. That may have been the greatest shock to the first audience to hear this story. Families held land within the family for generations because they believed that the land had been God's gift to them since the time of Moses. So when this son sells his share of the ancestral land, he was turning his back on, cutting himself off from home and family. But the allure of the far country, where no one could find him, proved strong. And the fun lasted until the money ran out. And then the young man found himself jobless and homeless and broke in a place far from home, far from Daddy's contacts and Daddy's network of friends, the kind of people who could bail him out, dry him out, help him out with an internship in a paid apartment and a loaner car. Here in the far country, where nobody back home could find him, the boy had to get by on his own. So he went to work on a farm where his job was to feed the pigs. Scandalous stuff for a bright boy with a promising future from a good home. Oh, how the mighty are fallen. It didn't take many days of watching the pigs eat their fill while he scraped by on ramen noodles before the boy came to his senses. He realized that home hadn't been so bad after all. His father paid his employees well, so much so that most of them had built up little nest eggs. Finding enough to eat wasn't a problem for any of the hired hands the way it was now for him. So he decided to pack up and go back home to cast himself on his father's mercy. He cooked up a scheme wherein he'd go back home and ask to be allowed to join the family business, not in an executive position, mind you, but at entry level, earning minimum wage. After all, he wasn't worthy of being called a son anymore. Perhaps the best he could hope for was to be considered a hired hand. His older brother didn't think he was worthy of being called a son anymore. As it happens, before his younger brother had made his way up the long driveway, their father had spotted him in the distance. Beneath the scruff of beard that he had grown and the mop of unkempt hair, behind the bloodshot, tear-filled eyes, the father had recognized his younger son and had run out to meet him. The father's security detail and personal assistant watched with a mixture of curiosity and alarm as the old man grabbed his son and held him tightly in an embrace. They watched with fascination and horror as the old man stroked that mop of unkempt hair over and over, kissing away the boy's tears, even as tears ran down his own cheeks. The boy began to offer his mea culpa, offering his apologies for all of his mistakes, even managing to get out the part of the speech about how he was no longer worthy to be called his father's son. But his father cut him off mid-speech and instructed the staff who had been watching the scene from the front porch to put together a party, complete with fatted calf. "For this son of mine was dead," the father said, "and is alive again. He was lost and has been found." And they began to celebrate. Everyone, that is, except the older brother. He was still working. And when he came home and smelled the food and heard the music, he asked one of the waiters what was going on. "Your brother has come home," the waiter replied, "and your father has killed the fatted calf to celebrate." And the older brother grew angry and refused to come into the party. As an older brother myself, I totally get it. You work hard, obey the rules, stay out of trouble, and out of respect for your family's name and status, never do anything the least bit scandalous. Then here comes the wayward sibling, who hated your parents and wanted them dead and didn't mind telling them so, and caused embarrassment by being so greedy and selling the land and giving everybody the finger as he walked out the door. And then Dad, whose integrity you've admired and whose pride you've protected and whose love and approval mean more to you than anything else in the world, goes and throws a party for this slacker, this ingrate, this waste of a life who has thrown away everything he's ever been given? Dad, do you even have a clue what he's been doing with the money? Do you have any idea who he's been hanging out with? Does that matter to you at all? And now you welcome him home and reward this behavior with a ring and a robe and a feast of fatted calf. I can't, Dad. I'm done. I'm out. He's right, of course. Any proper Palestinian patriarch, any self-respecting parent, anyone who cared about upholding and maintaining community standards would have whipped that boy within an inch of his life and sent him packing back to wherever he had come from. A father who had been shamed in the way this man had by this insolent, ungrateful child ought to have disowned him on the spot in front of God and everybody, but he didn't. He did the very opposite. For all this time, he had been waiting, looking, hoping that his younger son would come home. He couldn't bear the thought that he didn't know where his little boy was, or what he was doing, or whether he was okay, whether he was even alive. Day after day, he would scan the horizon, hoping his child would come home. So much to our surprise, and to the dismay of his older brother, the prodigal son is welcomed home by an equally prodigal father. And not just welcomed as a wayfaring stranger, but restored as a son and an heir. The kissing, the sandals, the robe, the ring, all of these were symbols that this wayward child, this lost son, was a member of the family again. The very family that this child had spurned, had turned his back on, had said, "I don't want to be part of you," now received him with love. All but one, that is. The kiss off, the scandal, the shame, the rejection, all was forgiven. He was home, safe and sound, alive, not dead, and that was all that mattered to the boy's father. I was talking the other day with an octogenarian friend of mine, and a bit of wisdom that comes in one's 80-something year, he said to me, "Jeff, I have wasted so much of my life. So many opportunities that were given me, so many possibilities that came my way, I've wasted the gifts God has given me. I was busy doing other things. I was chasing other dreams." Maybe you're like my aged friend. Maybe you sense that you've wasted some opportunities. Or maybe you're like the older brother. Maybe you worry that you've wasted your life being responsible and doing the right thing, and what have you got to show for it? Maybe you are still living in the far country, but you're coming to your senses and you're feeling a longing for home. Maybe you have spent some time among the libertine men and scarlet women. Or maybe you're the proper sort of person. Whoever you are, my friends, there is a father who has been waiting, looking, hoping that you will come home. There is a father who has been waiting, looking, hoping that you will realize that you have a share of his property, that you will know that all that he has is yours, but he desperately wants to give it to you. Whether you have wandered far from home or whether you have stayed close by, the Father cannot wait to embrace you and include you in the feast, to give you his best gifts, and to say to you, welcome back.